You're listening to Radio Rehab, the most informative substance abuse program on the airways. Your host is Lisa Seif, who's the director of the Ward County Court Substance Abuse Program. You can pick up the phone right now and give Lisa a call at 812-424-1400. Or if you're outside of Evansville, it's 1-888-846-7867. Radio Rehab. And now, here's Lisa Seif.
Good morning and welcome back to Radio Rehab. It's always good to be here on Saturdays and share with our community all kinds of faces and profiles of how substance abuse and co-occurring disorders affect our families and our neighborhoods. So we're glad to be back every Saturday to have a discussion with the real experts, the people that have suffered from this thing and people that have recovered from alcoholism or drug addiction as well. So welcome back. Thanks for joining in with our conversation today. Don't hesitate to call 424-1400. Our guests are always open about themselves, which always amazes me how open and honest people are about this thing and how it's affected their life and their family. And they're always willing to answer anybody's questions. We want to make sure that this show answers any questions or curiosities or concerns that any of you have in the community and want to know. Because today we have a friend of mine who I've loved and known for over 20 years that's been in the rooms and has been in recovery, and she's going to share her story with you. And then her three children are here, and they're going to talk about how her alcoholism affected them as children of an alcoholic. So this is going to be a really good discussion today. And again, call if you want to know how it affects the children, if you want to know how alcoholism affects a person's everything, their life, the way they see the world today, don't hesitate to call. So with that, I want to introduce my friend Angie, who I have known for a long, long time, and she has always been excited about recovery and loves her children, is a fabulous mother, but suffers from alcoholism as well. So she's going to share her story with us today, and her kids are here to share as well. So hang on. Don't hesitate to call. I'm going to introduce you now to my friend Angie. Hi, Angie.
Hi, Lisa.
Good to see you. Happy Saturday.
You too.
Definitely. Thanks for coming on and being willing to share with us.
I'm more than happy to do that. Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. So you want to introduce your family, or should we go around and let them introduce themselves? Or
they're old enough to talk. They can share.
They're old enough to talk now, huh? Start with the oldest.
Hi, I'm Mackenzie. I'm 16. I go to Memorial.
Hi, I'm Maddie. I'm 15, and I go to Memorial.
Hi, I'm Luke. I'm 11, and I go to Christ the King School.
Okay, good. Thank you. Thank you all for coming. A lot of young kids, huh, Ange?
Yes.
In your family. So were you born and raised in Evansville? Just kind of tell us about you.
I was born in Tell City, Indiana.
Tell City.
From a very prominent Catholic family. Started drinking when I was 14. Had played around with it here and there when I was younger at family parties and such. Went into drugs. And by the age of 20, I was found myself in recovery down at the Greenhouse.
Oh, my gosh, Mulberry Center.
Mm-hmm. Back in 1989.
So at 14, you had already started using.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, what was going through your head? How many brothers and sisters? What was your parents' attitude toward alcohol? Was it
the disease does run in the family, especially on my mom's side. But it was nothing back then for kids to have a sip of their dad's beer or another adult's beer if they ran to the fridge and got one, and if there was any leftover wine in the bottles, my cousins or girlfriends, we'd take it back to the bedroom and we'd drink whatever leftover backwash was left. And so it wasn't looked upon the way it is today. And life gets hard when you're a teenager. Mm-hmm. And I desperately wanted to fit in. And that's what people started doing. And I didn't have the strength inside to say no. Plus, I didn't really want to. But had no idea the effects it would have on the rest of my life.
Mm.
And how it would affect the children that were going to be born to me later on in life.
So from 14, the drinking just took off.
For 6 years. I hit rock bottom. I have a real low pain tolerance.
So 6 years of heavy drinking, like every weekend, every day?
Oh, yeah.
And drugging?
Not so much every day until like in 87 when I graduated high school. Mm-hmm. Then it became more every day because I was out of the house. I had moved to Evansville. Newburgh at the time was in beauty school with my girlfriend, and we'd go to school and come home and party.
Yeah, they say in high school, it's just they drink every weekend. In college, it's every day available. So you got out of your home, and the world was yours, so
exactly.
to speak. And it was easier then, wasn't it?
A lot easier.
So no problems? You didn't think that was a little odd that you were drinking all the time, or you think that's just normal for that age?
I didn't. Anyone that was close to me,
yeah.
as far as my peers, that's what we did. I truly did not see a problem at all.
So, well, and we can ask your kids about this, too. So when you're a teenager, it's a tough sell to say that this stuff's going to cause problems for you in your life.
Oh, yeah. And I could hear horrific stories about other people. And for some reason, I never looked at it as it's something that could happen to me.
Mm-hmm.
That was their problem.
Right.
But that wasn't going to happen to me. I was like, I had that protective shield around me. Had no clue.
Did your family know?
They knew I was drinking and that I wasn't listening to them, and I was being very vile to my parents, but all my siblings had already moved out of the house.
Mm-hmm.
So, but my oldest brother came to me like in October of 88 and said he really sees that I'm out of control and there's another way. But it still took me another 6 months before I got it together.
So what finally did make you see the truth?
You know, I don't even know if it was the truth. I still had a horrible desire to want to make everybody happy, to be a people pleaser. Mm. And this guy I was seeing, every time he would call, he went to school in Terre Haute. And every time he would call me when I was living here in Evansville, I was always drunk. Mm. Or out of my mind or slurring. And he was a family friend, and he said, either you tell your parents or I'm going to. So it wasn't like I hit a rock bottom. It was...
Somebody did an intervention.
Someone was threatening to go to my parents, and I'd rather it go from me than from someone else.
So did you go tell your parents?
I did.
Then what?
I chose my brother's birthday dinner to let the whole family know.
No.
It was about being the center of attention for me. and I said that this guy thinks I may have an alcohol and drug problem. I don't know if I do or not. Could you please pass the Parmesan? Because we were having a spaghetti dinner. Like it was no big deal. So I went. That was on May 1st. I couldn't get in for an interview until May 4th of 89. So on May 3rd, I had my last hurrah.
You mean your assessment for treatment?
Right.
So you went to treatment?
Yes. And they thought I needed to be inpatient, and I...
Ooh, you didn't like that.
Said, no, I need, you know, I have a job. So
right.
I was able to make it through outpatient, but it was... I want to say it's kind of foggy, but 3 nights a week.
That's right. 10 hours a week.
Yeah.
Yeah. So were you still single then when you went through rehab?
Yeah.
You were?
Yes.
I
always
had long.
Some guy involved.
Some
I mean,
guy
God
was
sakes.
There.
Yes.
But when you went through treatment, do you think that treatment helps? Do you think it's treatment is a quicker, good shot at getting into recovery?
For me, absolutely.
Yeah.
Because there were people I needed to be accountable to.
Yeah.
Whereas the same thing goes for meetings as well, but I needed both
right.
in order for it to actually adhere to my life.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. I think treatment, if it's good, is a prep school for AA. And treatment really, really helps, not just you, but the whole family.
Mm-hmm.
It gives you an understanding of what's wrong with you. So did treatment help you see that you had alcoholism and that you had to treat it? What did treatment do for you?
I think it took quite a while for me to accept in my heart of hearts that this was about me.
Mm-hmm.
Like I had said, I wanted so desperately to make people happy in my life.
Yeah.
So therefore, I was just doing the motions, mm-hmm. taking the actions.
Fake it till you make it.
Exactly.
So you went through treatment and stayed sober after that, didn't you?
I did.
Yeah. And then got married.
And got married.
And had these wonderful kids.
Mm-hmm.
93, you got married?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my. And still sober and in recovery.
Still sober and in recovery. And it lasted that way. In 98, our son Jacob died.
Yeah.
And was able to hold close to so many friends in recovery.
Mm-hmm.
And thank God I got right in the dead middle of recovery. Mm-hmm. Or I don't think I could have... Mm-hmm. I know I could not have stayed sober.
And you were in the middle of the AA rooms, no doubt
totally
about it.
Totally in the middle.
So you went to a lot of AA meetings.
Yes.
How many?
I went at least 4 times a week then. Plus, you know, at that point I still had my girls. Mackenzie
right.
was 3 and Maddie was 2. And then about a month after Jacob died, I just about came undone.
Yeah.
And... shared quite profoundly with God that he better show me a sign, because I just did not think I was going to be able to not use or drink to numb myself.
Right.
And the next morning I found out I was pregnant with Luke.
Yeah.
So
there came Luke.
So that kept me sober for a while too.
Just having the family.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's any different being a female that has alcoholism or an addictive disorder than for men that have alcoholism and addictive disorders?
In what respect?
Just the recovery process. Do you think the issues for women are different?
I think we as women, I can only speak from a women's point of view, but
mm-hmm.
I know I carried a lot of shame and guilt
mm-hmm.
for so long. And to be real honest, I think I carried a lot of that up until this last year or two.
The shame and guilt?
Oh, yeah.
I hear that a lot from the women, especially with their children mm-hmm. in reference to that. That shame and guilt.
It was immense.
Yeah. And you've always heard my line. You guys from Teen Power have heard me say, a man that's a drunk is still called a man. A woman that's a drunk is called everything but a woman. There seems to be a difference.
And if someone isn't calling you that as a woman, you feel and believe that in your heart that that's all you are.
Mm-hmm.
Are those vile words.
Yes. So that's something a lot of women have to deal with when they get dried up from the drink or the drug, all that shame.
Mm-hmm. It was real hard for me to listen and believe you and many other women, especially in recovery,
mm-hmm.
that when they looked at me, they'd say, you're so beautiful, you're so lovable, you're such a wonderful person, blah, blah, blah. But
right.
it didn't. It was as if you were sharing that with someone else. It was
mm-hmm.
hard for me to accept good things about myself.
Mm-hmm. And you can see that in a lot of women that come in, just their posture of heaviness.
Oh,
and that's
absolutely.
That shame. So, Angie, you were born into a very religious family.
Yes.
So right away when you started drinking in your adolescence, or maybe later in your drinking and drugging career, do you think that tied into some of that shame too, that did you ever think I'm in sin, I'm cursed, there's something evil going on here? Didn't any of that religiosity play into?
I had a lot of those feelings, but I don't feel like I got that from church or my religion or
mm-hmm.
my faith. I think a lot of interpretation on my part.
That you were doing wrong, that it was immoral.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And there still is a lot of denial in our society with alcohol. A lot of people still think it's a sin, not a sickness.
Exactly.
And I think until we get in the rooms and into a rehab, it is hard to understand. It isn't a sin. It's a sickness.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. So then you were married and had these wonderful children. So they were born into a sobriety atmosphere.
Yes.
Madison, did you know your parents were very involved in AA and Mackenzie and Madison? Luke, did you all know that this was an AA family?
Yeah, we always knew that it was. We knew that our parents were, quote-unquote, allergic to alcohol. Mm. They couldn't drink like other people could. And we grew up going to meetings with our parents, and we'd go to dinner afterwards and stuff. So we grew up around, like, the atmosphere of AA.
Mm-hmm. So did that feel unusual to you all, or was that just normal?
I thought it was completely normal. I mean, I guess I knew to some extent that other kids didn't do that.
Like, yeah, other kids aren't going to AA dinners on Saturday night. Right.
But to me, that's just how we were brought up. It wasn't something that was.
It was just normal.
Yeah.
Like some kids are brought up in homes where there's drunkenness and drugs all the time, and they think that's normal. You all were brought up in a sober home and thought that was normal.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was normal because, I mean, we just grew up going to it.
Mm-hmm. It's just part of what you did, like church. That's great, Ange, that you just were able to give them that gift of sobriety from childhood, and they didn't know any different.
They do now, but
well,
you're
yeah,
right.
Yeah,
they
we'll get to that.
They did not know any different. It wasn't weird. It wasn't embarrassing. It was just who we were as a family. And
I know.
As their parents. And
God, I remember used to bring them, and everybody just loved them up just like they loved you guys up.
Slurped them out.
Now I think they're idiots, but no. They've turned into teenage kids now. Don't go away, Radio Rehab. We're going to have a good discussion with Angie and Mackenzie and Maddie and Luke about how their alcoholism and recovery from alcoholism and drug addiction has affected the family. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
This Sunday on Lifetime, Army Wives is back.
Life's going to change in a major way.
It's the most anticipated season yet.
It's a constant balancing act between your needs and the Army's needs.
I thought you said he was out of your life.
I'm so sorry.
You're unbelievable.
When lines get crossed, they pledge allegiance to each other.
You are not alone, and you know that.
Army Wives, the powerful new season premieres Sunday at its new time, 9, 8 Central on Lifetime.
So, Lisa, mucus, what brings you to counseling?
Sinus congestion.
And she blames me.
You are mucus.
Well, did you ever think it's swelling due to nasal inflammation?
I assumed.
Yeah, there she goes.
Mucus, please. It's more constructive to offer a solution.
Okay. New Advil Congestion Relief. It treats the real problem of sinus congestion with the strength of Advil and an effective decongestant.
Everyone feel better?
Much.
New Advil Congestion Relief. The right sinus medicine for the real problem. Use as directed.
Ashley Furniture Home Store in Evansville's lowest prices of the season sale. How does Ashley Furniture do it? Buyers have slashed prices on every mattress set, bedroom, living room, and dining set. Plus, get 12 months no-interest financing. Brand new at Ashley, express local next-day delivery on every Sealy Simmons mattress set, Tempur-Pedic, at guaranteed lowest prices. Don't have one more restless night. Buy today, sleep great tomorrow. Don't miss this sale at Ashley Furniture Home Store, located on North Green River Road at Morgan Avenue in Evansville.
Are you a high school student or recent graduate seeking career information and advice for your future? Then plan to participate in the Southwest Indiana College Access Network College and Career Expo, March 6, 1 to 4 p.m. at the Center. The Expo will provide an excellent opportunity for you to visit with colleges local and nationwide, get advice from admission experts, attend free seminars, and speak with career consultants in the areas of human services, architecture and manufacturing, business and finance, education and training, IT, science, engineering and math, and health science and cosmetology. If you would like to outsmart today's economy and take a bold step toward your successful future, be sure to attend the region's largest college and career expo with over 100 exhibitors. For more information and to see a full list, visit collegeandcareerexpo.com or contact the expo office at 502-429-5825. The College and Career Expo is free to the public and is proudly sponsored by Southwest Indiana College Access Network, Junior Achievement, Evansville Courier and Press, and 21st Century Scholars. S. Jackson Ministries presents the gospel play, Who Do You Think You Are? Friday and Saturday, March 25th and 26th, 7 to 9 p.m. at the Center of Hope Church, located at 808 Southeast 3rd Street. Armed with a cast of talented singers, actors, and musicians, writer and producer Stanley Jackson Sr. is sure to deliver an entertaining performance that will make you laugh, cry, sing, and sure enough, get your dance on. Tickets are $15 for adults, $10 for college students, high school, and under $7. Seating is limited, so get your tickets from any cast member at Nazarene or online at sjmproductions.net. First 200 tickets sold for each night get VIP seating. Partial proceeds for this event will go to Center of Hope, who feed the homeless in our community. This will be the gospel play event of the year, so you don't want to miss Who Do You Think You Are? March 25th and 26th, Center of Hope Church. Be there and be blessed.
You're listening to Radio Rehab, the most informative substance abuse program on the airways. Your host is Lisa Seif, who's the director of the Ward County Court Substance Abuse Program. You can pick up the phone right now and give Lisa a call at 812-424-1400, or if you're outside of Evansville, it's 1-888-846-7867. Radio Rehab. And now, here's Lisa Seif.
Welcome back. We're having a good discussion with Angie and her three adorable teenagers. So don't hesitate to call 424-1400. Nothing's below the belt. Give us a call if you have any questions about female alcoholism and how it affects the family. Our producer gave me some stats this morning that are alarming. She was telling me that she had heard that the DEA has run out of money to help the state police confiscate methamphetamine labs in the state of Indiana. So that's going to be one of the cuts that we're going to be seeing through legislation. And she was telling me last year there were 1,346 meth labs seized in the state of Indiana. So if that money gets dried up, the state police are going to have to really rely on local government to help with the war on drugs, so to speak, which is disheartening when there's cuts. A lot of people are getting cut, but it looks like the drug world is going to be seeing some of the after effects of the cuts also. Angie, did you ever do drugs?
I did drugs. I never did meth.
Right.
But I'm sure had I tried it.
Had you been around at that time? Because meth just got here about 10 years ago, I guess. It was cranked before then.
Yes. And I would have been off and running. But no, I smoked pot. And
was pot a pretty regular deal of yours?
That was, yes. But not so much until I moved out of mom and dad's back in 87. So between the last 2 years of my big O using, but then I tried some acid and
cocaine,
but that was about the extent of it.
Yeah, I could see you liking some cocaine.
But you know what? I only tried
make
it once
you drink
or twice.
More.
It didn't do it for me, and I'm so grateful because I've seen people who it did do for.
Yeah.
I'm so glad I didn't try it long enough.
Alcohol and pot did enough for you, huh?
Mm-hmm.
So when you all hear your mother's stories and you know her history of the demise of the drug and alcohol world, does that affect you all as her children in any way, Maddie?
Okay. Well, I just take it as like an example to not do it, and like whenever my friends, because like I was really close with some friends over the summer, and then like I was informed by my other close friends that they wouldn't be the good people to hang out with, and so I switched my group of friends, and like now they're doing stuff and like partying like every weekend, and so I guess it's hard for me, but I'm glad that I'm like with a good group of friends, and then I'm like trying hard right now because like I guess I realized because of what mom did whenever she was our age, it like, because it's like affecting us because like she didn't go to college. And so like, I guess it's like affecting us with like the money issue. And so like, I'm trying to work hard in school and not get into that stuff so that I can go to a college and get a good education so then I can have a good job for like my kids whenever I grow up.
What a mature way to look at it. How old are you?
I'm 15.
Yeah, your mom was well into it at your age, huh?
Mm-hmm.
So you've taken her experience and her history and turned it into something to do exactly the opposite for yourself.
Yeah.
And that is exactly the opposite of who I was.
Yeah.
I would have been like, had my mom been a drinker or whatever, I would have been like, what's the difference? You did it.
Right.
And thankfully, my children, Maddie, has got it.
Wow. How did you too, Mackenzie? You're pretty much committed to not making those same adolescent mistakes too, aren't you?
Yeah. I try to surround myself with people that I know aren't going to be the ones that party. And honestly, like from all the stories that Mama said, like she said that she was having fun at the time, but then she says all the consequences that she had to go through and all the people that she let down. And like Maddie was saying, she's trying really hard in school, and that's what we're trying to do because we haven't had a... I guess we haven't been as fortunate as other kids that we've gone to school with because neither of our parents have gone to college. And so they've been working really hard to get us through. And it's an absolute blessing that we're able to go to Memorial, and I don't want to throw that away because they've worked so hard to get us to where we're at, and especially my mom. But
she's amazing, isn't she?
She is. And there's just no sense in throwing all that away.
God, you're mature. How old are you?
16.
And you already can see that somebody's working really hard to get you the education and preparation to go on to college. And to, do you know what you want to do if you go to college, what you'd want to major in? Don't say counseling.
I kind of want to go into, like, psychology, counseling and stuff. But
it's not a lot of money, but it's very rewarding.
Yeah, that's what Mom's been telling me. But
it's very rewarding.
Yeah.
Do you, Maddie, know yet what you want to do?
I want to be...
Besides bury your brother by the time you're a senior in high school, do you have any other aspirations?
I don't know what kind, but, like, I was looking towards, like, being a doctor or someone that can, like, help people, like, every day.
Oh, good. We need more doctors in the family. Good. What about you, Luco? You're only what? How old are you?
11.
So you probably don't have a clue yet, huh? If you can survive these sisters, you're going to be a Superman.
To be honest, I was thinking kind of like Mackenzie, be like a counselor or something like that.
So all of your kids, Angie, want to be in the service profession, it sounds like. You want to help others, a lot like their mother. Want to do good for the world. And then all your siblings are priests and nuns, too, so they probably, it's in their DNA to do
now,
service
work.
Now,
there's one that's married, a sibling that is married with three kids, but the rest of them, yes.
The rest of them are,
a bishop, two priests, and a nun.
Oh, my God, no wonder you got drunk.
I just was showing them that I did not have the calling.
Well, you do have a calling, but wow. You know, and didn't, I mean, even Jesus went to the people that nobody understood in society. So you're going to the alcoholics and addicts.
That's right.
And it sounds like your children are doing the same. Do you all find that some of your friends come to you and say, I think my mother has a problem, or my dad? Do you become kind of the experts of what it's like to have a parent that has alcoholism or addiction? No. Do most of your friends know about your parents?
Yeah, like we're really open about what we've grown up with in the past couple of years, but I don't think that either their parents don't have problems or they don't see it.
Right.
Or they're not comfortable talking about it, and that's fine, but they know that we're always here, that we've gone through it, and that they can always come to us. It's not something that they have to be ashamed of or
I think
embarrassed
that's
about.
Awesome that you all aren't ashamed of it at all, that you shout it from the rooftops almost, that you're proud of it, and that people can get better.
Well, I feel blessed because a lot of their friends come and stay the weekends with
us.
And,
right,
and they may have issues going on in their life, but it doesn't mean it's about alcoholism or drugs.
True.
But I feel that I'm very approachable because a lot of times their girlfriends will
You're the cool parent.
Bounce. Well, I don't try to be the
No,
cool
I know,
parent,
but I bet
but
she is,
she is
isn't
the cool
she?
Parent.
Yeah,
she
I could see
the one that.
That
they always go to. Like, they go to have, like, little vent sessions with my mom, and my mom will be like, yeah, like, helping
That's
them out,
great.
Like cheering them on.
She's everybody's mom.
Yeah.
Have you all ever been to an Alateen meeting?
I went to an Al-Anon meeting
Al-Anon.
For health class, and there was a lot of kids that went that night.
I know. There's a lot of younger people coming into Al-Anon mm-hmm. now, which is just for the audience here at Radio Rehab. Al-Anon is for the family members that aren't alcoholic or addict, but they have a family member that is. And there used to be Al-Ateen. There was Al-Anon and then Al-Ateen. Mm-hmm. I was thinking it'd be cool if you guys would start another Al-Ateen group.
I actually asked my mom about that a couple years ago.
That'd be a great project.
Yeah.
You'd like
they
to do that?
They used to have Al-A-Tot, too.
They had Al-A-Tot for the Lukester's age.
But I haven't, well.
It's usually a do-gooder Al-Anoner that gets it going, because mm-hmm. it's a commitment. So it usually takes an adult, of course,
right.
to keep the momentum going. But, God, don't we need a place like that for teenagers to go?
Yeah.
Because it's one out of four families is dealing with it. That's a lot.
That's
a lot.
That's huge.
Yeah. So do you still go to meetings, Ange? How has your recovery now that your kids are older and you are more mature now in the recovery development?
I kind of started dwindling out of meetings, unfortunately, like back in 2005. I had a couple of surgeries. I wanted to get my kids the opportunity to be more in their faith. Mm-hmm. And I kind of started not pushing people away, but...
Drifting away.
I wanted it more for them and me to get more committed to church. And
you probably thought, I've got a decade under my belt of AA, so I'll be fine.
Unfortunately, you're exactly right.
Mm.
You really are. I thought it was in there, mm-hmm. and just like with anything else, if you're not utilizing it in your life, we kind of forget or become mm-hmm. numb to some of that, or thoughts, processes change, mm-hmm. and unfortunately went through a divorce I wasn't ready for, knew nothing about, and within 29 days...
Blindsided again.
29 days is all it took, and I was back out there, and I didn't plan it.
Wow.
I went to throw something away in the pantry, and I looked up, and I was in Tell City, and there were fifths of and I took the cap off, and I was done. I blacked out that day.
After how many years of sobriety?
18 and a half.
Oh, my God, that's so scary.
It was horrifying. It was very horrifying for my kids.
18 years of sobriety and you drank again. This really is a day at a time, isn't it?
And I had always heard that our disease just waits right there. It waits for us. And it doesn't, you know, you don't start off like your first drink ever. It's you're picking up where you left off. And that is so true.
So the disease continues to progress even in sobriety.
Absolutely.
And you just... Not like the big book, not a cloud in the horizon. You grabbed that booze and drank it.
Absolutely.
Did you all know she relapsed? Or did you hide it from the kids?
Well, there's not a whole lot of hiding when we're as
when
close
mom's
as
drinking.
We are.
Yeah.
And it was that same day, and I had hid in the bathroom. And
told me it was lotion.
Hmm?
I don't know. What? She had said that she had a beer.
How did that affect you?
Well, it was absolutely terrifying. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what was going to happen to us kids. I didn't know if we were going to have to go live with our dad. I didn't know what was going to happen. Cause,
your whole world changed.
Yeah. Mm. It was just, you didn't know what was going to happen the next day.
So you went from being totally secure to being totally insecure.
Mm-hmm.
You too?
Yeah, and plus it was like right after the divorce, and so like there's just a lot going on, and then on top of that we didn't know like, well, like that day, mom said, well, I remember like going up and talking to her and knowing that something wasn't right, and I didn't know what it was because I'd never been around her whenever she was drinking, and so...
That's true, you guys never saw her drinking before.
Yeah, right. So I guess that was like the first time, and... Then, like, later on that day, she told us that she really didn't. And so, like, then, so I guess, like, then I believed her. And so I didn't think that she had drank. And so, like, after all that time, not all that time, but it was, like, a couple months, then she had been. And so looking back on it, like, I remember the times where she wasn't, like, always, like, there. And, like, I would ask her what was wrong. But she'd always, like, make up something. So, I don't know.
So you knew it, but you didn't know it.
Yeah.
It wasn't really out there. Where, Mackenzie, you knew.
Well, I didn't know completely. Mm-hmm. She said that she had had a beer, but then she had told us all that she really hadn't. Mm. And obviously it wasn't a beer, so... but there was just... We knew something was going on. Mm-hmm. We didn't know what it was. But.
You thought it could have been the divorce, too.
Yeah, and because of her bipolarness,
yeah. Mm-hmm. That's okay.
There was mm-hmm. just like, there was always those times that there was something off, but this time it was just completely out there, and we thought it could have been just from the divorce, stress, depression, you know, just whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But
how did you eventually find out that it was the drinking?
Halloween. I had come home that night. She was supposed to meet all three of us kids at different parties that night, mm-hmm. and she couldn't find the keys, so she didn't meet us. And then I had gotten home, and they told me that, because there was like six people at my house, because they had all tried to find her, and they couldn't, and mm-hmm. they knew something was up. So I had gotten home, and they told me that, and then I went and stayed the night at a friend's house, and my Uncle Bernie came over, so.
You know what, and I remember you telling me at Teen Power 3 years ago that your mom, that you, I think you were thinking she, you weren't sure, but you thought she was drinking again.
Well,
that was the summer.
I think it was the medication, so. But
you knew something, you were hurting that year big time.
I was. I knew there was something going on between my parents because mm-hmm. that was before the divorce.
Oh,
it was like right
that's
there.
That's right, yeah. Wow.
So,
God, you kids have a lot to
deal
with.
Yeah, we found out about the divorce like the morning of picking her up.
Yeah.
Or the day she left.
The day I left, yeah. They found out about the divorce.
Yeah.
And
oh
then
my God.
I came home because they didn't want that my week to be ruined at Teen Power. They didn't tell me. And then I got
home. We didn't even know.
Right.
That's right. I remember
Maddie,
all that
Luke
now.
And I didn't even know.
Yeah.
So, wow. Shock and then shock again.
Mm-hmm. My dad tried to cover it up by taking me to Two-Bit Bandit.
Yeah, a movie. Yep. Try to keep
yeah.
you busy. Don't go away, Radio Rehab. We're talking to Angie, who just told us after 18 years she started drinking again. So just a reminder of how vulnerable we all are with our recovery and how it affects the family. We'll be right back.
African Americans Yesterday and Today, sponsored by Diversity Supply Company, Incorporated. Jerome Stewart, President.
And now, a moment in Black history. Paul Robeson. Paul was the first Black actor to play Othello on the American stage. A Phi Beta Kappa student at Rutgers, he attained the highest scholastic standing. He can speak all the modern European languages and Russian. He also reads 20 other languages, including Chinese. A renowned concert singer, he received a law degree from Columbia. He was a fighter for Negro rights during his early career.
WEOA, the most diverse radio station in the tri-state, is proud to announce two new exciting programs for our Hispanic friends in the community. Tune in every Saturday afternoon at 12:30 to the new 24/7 Dad's Hispanic program in Spanish, sponsored by the Juan Diego Latino Center. The half-hour show discusses life skills, parenting, and a host of other relevant topics. Conexion Thalia Radio Show. Thalia is a platinum-selling recording artist, internationally known, and nationally syndicated radio host. This popular two-hour weekly program comes to Evansville by way of WEOA every Sunday afternoon from 12 to 2 p.m. Thalia discusses music, fashion, and entertainment. See you this Sunday at noon for the Conexion Thalia Radio Show, sponsored by the Juan Diego Latino Center.
Are you a high school student or recent graduate seeking career information and advice for your future? then plan to participate in the Southwest Indiana College Access Network College and Career Expo, March 6, 1 to 4 p.m. at the Center. The Expo will provide an excellent opportunity for you to visit with colleges local and nationwide, get advice from admission experts, attend free seminars, and speak with career consultants in the areas of human services, architecture and manufacturing, business and finance, education and training, IT, science, engineering and math, and health science and cosmetology. If you would like to outsmart today's economy and take a bold step toward your successful future, be sure to attend the region's largest college and career expo with over 100 exhibitors. For more information and to see a full list, visit collegeandcareerexpo.com or contact the expo office at 502-429-5825. The College and Career Expo is free to the public and is proudly sponsored by Southwest Indiana College Access Network, Junior Achievement, Evansville Courier and Press, and 21st Century Scholars.
You're listening to Radio Rehab, the most informative substance abuse program on the airways. Your host is Lisa Seif, who's the director of the Ward County Court Substance Abuse Program. You can pick up the phone right now and give Lisa a call at 812-424-1400, or if you're outside of Evansville, it's 1-888-846-7867. Radio Rehab. And now, here's Lisa Seif.
Hi, everybody. We're back talking to Angie and her three children just about alcoholism and relapse. And before the break, the kids were starting to talk about the divorce as well. Do you all think divorce affects you almost in the same kind of terror way that alcoholism does?
I don't know if it's the same terror, because with alcoholism, with my mom drinking, it was just like a constant fear that was there. Mm-hmm. With the divorce, it was kind of a constant anger. It was because we couldn't control either situation, and we couldn't change what was going on in my mom's drinking, and we couldn't change what was going on in my dad's head.
Right.
So wow. I don't think it was the fear.
The anger.
It was the anger.
And what you said, and I think we sometimes forget how young people don't feel like they have any control or any say in major decisions of their parents.
We don't.
Yeah.
And not even just with our parents, but in any alcoholic's life, we don't have control over what they do. We
right.
can't say, you know, you shouldn't be doing that, because it's truly a disease, like you've said. It's not a willpower thing.
No.
At all.
Right.
And that's what some people don't understand. They say, well, they can always quit. Well, no, they can't.
No. It works. And willpower works with alcoholism about like it works with diarrhea. So, yeah, willpower, it takes willpower, I think, for all of us to keep going to meetings and keep trying to stay clean a day at a time. But, yeah, once you pick that drink up, that allergy hits and it's all over.
Mm-hmm. I feel like, actually, I don't even remember what I was going
to
say.
Like from the divorce to the alcoholism. So you got two big whammies all in 1 year.
Right.
All in 1 month.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. All
yes.
in 1 month.
Yeah.
So you guys probably felt, where are we going to go for shelter? What's going on?
Right. And I feel like throughout the whole thing, there was a sense of guilt almost.
To be the children?
To be the children, yeah. Because not just, we didn't feel like it was our fault for the divorce. Well, I didn't personally. I don't know about the other two. But there was just that guilt there that we couldn't change it.
Mm.
And all my life, I've been the caretaker. I've been the mom of the family,
the
you know, whatever.
The little hero, yeah.
Yeah. And I'd take care of Maddie and Luke whenever they needed something.
Right.
And because mom was always there, but
you were the junior mom.
I was, yeah. I was always
sure.
there.
You're
to
the
help.
Oldest.
Yeah. And that's where all the responsibility lays, is like right there on your shoulders. And throughout the divorce and whatever else, I felt like I had the entire world on my shoulders and I couldn't
wow.
do anything about it.
Well, you did for about 3.5 months while I was into my disease
mm-hmm.
again. You really
had to take care of everything.
These two.
So did you also have to keep the secrets?
I don't think I had secrets because we didn't know
yeah.
about her drinking. But there was just a lot of stress because we didn't know what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
We knew there was something wrong, but we didn't know to the full extent of what was happening. So I don't think there was secrets, but there was a lot of stress
and you try and take care of everything.
Right.
Did you notice that, Maddie, that everybody was stressed and feeling very insecure, or were you pretty buffered by your sister?
I think, like, for the most part, like, after we, like, realized, like, we can't do anything about it, then it was just, like, a change that we were going to have to get used to. And it was, like, hard for us because we were, like, we'd have to go to my dad's house, and we didn't like doing that because we were so angry with him.
Mm-hmm.
And so it felt like we were just getting tossed back and forth. And then on top of, like, the drinking and the divorce and everything like that, there was also the money issue with, like, how we're going to get a house.
Sure.
And get things we need and, like, have our education still.
We were living in a duplex for about a month down by Lorraine, and that was something we weren't used to. So
any of us.
It was just a change
of
total lifestyle.
Change.
Financial, emotional,
yeah.
Psychological, spiritual, every area was mm-hmm. upside down. Wow.
Yeah. Everything was uprooted.
Wow.
It was horrifying.
Yeah.
As the mom. So, and I had something numbing me. I can't imagine.
What it was like for them.
What it was like to walk in their shoes.
Did you, Luke, notice anything in your little young 9, 10, 11-year-old heart?
To be honest, whenever, like, the Halloween came, I thought that she was just playing around, but obviously she wasn't. Because I got home the next morning and saw her face, and it was just very emotional that morning.
The whole family suffers.
Very much.
The divorce and the disease. You all are so well adjusted as a family, though.
Mm-hmm.
What's the secret? What can we tell our listeners? How can families survive this thing? It's like a Pearl Harbor. Divorce, the disease of addiction, the mental illness, the bipolar, the depression, the post-traumatic stress disorder, you name it. How do you all make it work?
We're really close. We talk all the time. I mean,
so there's a lot of openness?
There's a lot of openness between me and my mom, between Luke and mom. Maddie and mom, they're
the middle child.
I get that. Butt heads, but they end up talking once everything has processed, because
mm-hmm.
Maddie can't just, you know, come out and say what she's thinking.
She's
right.
A processor. Right. She's the middle
there's
child. I totally get
that.
It, Maddie. I was a middle child. And I felt like I did not want to be in the middle of the sandwich. So.
But there's a lot of love there between she and I, too.
Oh, yes. That's true. There's a lot of love in this family and a lot of openness. So even though personalities may not always click, you all love each other, respect each other, honor each other, and that's so obvious.
Mom also isn't one that says that she can do no wrong. She always admits whenever she does something wrong. And I think that's what really kind of makes it work, because we know she's not perfect, she knows we're not perfect, and everybody's going to make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of forgiveness and trust that goes along with everything. So
God, that's awesome. Listen to her. Forgiveness, trust, all those spiritual things.
Mm-hmm.
But I think one thing you said, I'm going to remember, and maybe us adults need to remember, you all need us to let you know when we're wrong, too.
Yeah.
We're not perfect. Now, I am, but most adults are not perfect. So we need to let our young people know we make mistakes. So that's humanized your mother to you.
Yeah. And it's almost, I feel like adults are held up to higher standards because they've been up to, or they've gone through a lot, and they say that they know a lot more, but, and I respect that, but there's a lot of stuff that we've gone through, too.
Absolutely.
We're going to make mistakes, and they definitely make mistakes, and they almost hold themselves up to where nobody can touch them.
That's so true. I remember as a teenager, did you, Angie? I thought adults were like in another planet.
Oh, absolutely. But I want to say real quick, I mean, it's been 3.5 years that all this, the divorce and the
DD,
drinking.
The drinking and the divorce.
And I am so proud of my kids.
Mm.
They've given me the opportunity to make a big, huge mistake. but they've loved me through it, and I've loved them, and there's been bumps, but I mean, they have been a constant, and I'm just real proud of who they are and how they've come through this. Mm-hmm. I'm real proud of them. And that's not things I've done. That's who they are inside.
I think your role modeling has helped too, but you're right. They're incredible individuals.
And Mom isn't one of those people that condemns. She's there to listen. She mm-hmm. doesn't accuse.
Mm-hmm.
She always is. She gives us room to make our own decisions and make our, like, be able to grow as we are, like, as a person. And then if we do something wrong, she'll say, you know, that probably wasn't the best thing. And then she'll give advice, but it's not a condemning kind of
lecture.
Yeah.
That's great.
Maddie, so, do you feel the same way?
Yeah, Maddie, the middle child. Middle Maddie. You probably get lectured to by your older sister and your mother.
I don't know.
I was just teasing.
What? Yeah, bless your heart, Luke. You get it all, from all sides, huh? The youngest. So should we try to recruit your mom for Teen Power Camp, you think?
Yeah,
you need to get
I think it'll be fun.
Do you know what else is cool? That you guys want her involved in Teen Power. How many youth staff are like, I don't want my mother here as an adult staff?
I
and
feel
you
like
all want your mom in here.
Yeah, I feel like she's got a good message. I feel like if she shares what she has shared at Snowflake, then kids know that they're not alone.
Right.
And that us, like all three of us kids, have been through it, that they can talk to us, that they can talk to my mom. There was a kid that I've grown up with through Christ the King and through Memorial, and she has had problems in her family through addiction and alcohol and stuff, and she went up to my mom after her talk, and she was crying, and she said that she wanted my mom to go and talk to her mom, and it was just, it was really sad because I've known her for so long, and I don't think that I knew that there was so much going on in her life, too, because she always has a smile on her face, and it's those people that,
that are under the radar screen.
Yeah, that they don't look like there's anything wrong, and I feel bad for them because they feel like they have to be in a shell, and they can't let other people know what's going on because they feel like they're the only ones.
Right, right. So, oh, God, that's so true. So when you all tell your story, when your mother tells hers, other people can come out and say, wow, you all are incredible. Well, we've got like 3 minutes left, so I just want us to go around. Is there anything you all want to say just in the last sentence or two that would be helpful for families that are listening to us to understand about how this affects the family? Want to start, Luke?
So, what was the question
again? Anything in our last message to our audience of anything you would want to say that would help them learn how, if this is something going on in their family, what they can do to help?
I'd say just, you know, talk to your parents. Like, if it's just, like, going on for a while, then just talk to your parents and see if there's anything going on in their lives. And if there is, then you just need to, like, let them know that, you know, even though they're a kid, you're a kid, but they can still talk to you.
Mm-hmm. Keep that openness. Thank you.
I just think it's really important to keep that door of communication open with your children. Let them know when you're wrong. Mackenzie said, I think that's been very beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
And just be there for one another.
The communication, yeah, thank
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely.
Well, I remember, like, whenever, it like, growing up being, like, in going to AA meetings and just being in this kind of family, and then the divorce and, like, everything. And, like, I've always said that things happen for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, we didn't know. But, like, I guess, like, with everything that's happened in my life, it's just made me a stronger person. And so, I don't know, because, like, people do make mistakes. And so there's, if you take initiative of your actions and everything, then something good will happen later on. So even if you make mistakes, you can change it.
Great message. You can always change a mistake.
I feel like in a family that there should always be a line of communication open, and that there should always be that forgiveness and trust within each other, because if there isn't the trust and communication, then you really can't be a family. Mm-hmm. And I feel like there needs to be God in the house and just some kind of faith, no matter what it is. And there's always just has to be some kind of relationship between the parents and the kids. Mm-hmm. And if there is that trust, and there really shouldn't be too many problems. I mean, you're always going to have problems, but you can get through them with God and with your family.
Thank you for reminding us about God and about forgiveness. Absolutely. Well, thank you all so much. You're welcome. You've inspired me. Thank you for coming to Radio Rehab. Will you come back sometime?
Sure. Yeah.
Definitely.
Thanks for having us.
Oh, Mackenzie, you got to get some youth staff. We'll do a youth staff Radio Rehab.
That would be so fun.
Wouldn't that be cool?
Yeah.
I'll let you head that up since you're so good at heading things up.
I got it.
And thank you all again. What a family. Welcome. What a celebration of God and recovery and the good things that families can share together. Thanks for coming. And between now and next week, you all don't forget to do the next right thing.
Does your roof need replacing, your house need cleaning, or maybe you're ready to update your kitchen? Big or small, whatever your home improvement needs.